Welcome to the Asylum Fantasy Sports Show with your hosts, Bigger and Briggs.
That's right, coming to you on the Fantasy Sports Network, MTS Cable in Manitoba, and Cablevision Channel 147 in New York. It's the Asylum Fantasy Sports Show.
We are Fligger and Briggs. Welcome to the Asylum. Drop us a line at asylumfootball@gmail.com, asylumfantasysports@gmail.com as well. And we will try to get caught up and get them all answered as soon as possible. Rick, we're back from Canton.
Yeah, and exhausted. Don't forget Twitter at Asylum Football. Get those lineup questions
in there.
That
was your job.
You jumped right to Canton. You skipped right over me. But that's all right, Rick. You're still excited. I'm still excited. A great weekend in Canton, Ohio. Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrinement. Pro Football Hall of Fame game. Media day. Everything that was, Rick. Just a fantastic weekend.
Yeah, it sure was. And we have a lot of great material back from there that you will have the pleasure of hearing. A lot of it. And we'll have it all over the place.
Right.
Yeah, we got to get, some of it's out. The rest of it will be out soon, and we got to get rolling because the season progresses.
That's right. Time moves on. It was a great weekend, but it's also time to talk football. Rick, let's start with that in this segment. We'll get into the Hall of Fame game as the show goes on. Obviously, we'll have an agent's perspective with Relio Mastrantonio coming up. We're going to look at the Jermichael Finley situation with Relio and talk about that potential injury settlement. Rick, but somebody who may or may not have an injury settlement. I certainly hope the young man had some sort of insurance policy. Really sad to see David Wilson has had to retire. Cervical stenosis, I believe, is the medical term. That neck injury from last year re-aggravated in the preseason, and his career is over at the age of 23.
Yes, it is. But, good luck to the young man. And let's face it, he's had an opportunity, a very small percentage of all the people in the world have the chance to. And, I'm just glad that he got the recommendation to retire. He took it.
Right.
He's getting on with his life while he still has his health.
Yeah, and very understanding, I'm certain, behind the scenes. It was a lot harder for him saying all the right things in public. And you just hate to see it. A ton of potential, this guy, to swing it back to the business of fantasy football. This guy was, Rick, a second, third-round pick last year, real high potential, perpetually in Tom Coughlin's doghouse, which isn't a hard place to end up, and then this injury, it all ends. So good luck to David Wilson, and we're going to get in a lot more into the Giants running game here as the show goes on when we look at the Hall of Fame game. Rick, I found this very interesting. One common theme in most training camps are these fights between offensive and defensive players. For a long time, it was almost held up as a rite of passage, as something the coaches like to see. Well, Martellus Bennett got into it real good with cornerback Kyle Fuller in a recent Bears practice. Martellus Bennett was suspended indefinitely by Mark Trestman for that fight. This is something I've never seen before. He will be fined and suspended indefinitely.
Yeah, I don't get it, quite frankly. I'm not sure what the... Unless there's a lot more behind the scenes that we're not aware of. I mean, we already heard about the Dez Bryant, scuffle, and, they love the passion.
They usually like to see this.
They come right back at it and talk about one another. Dez and I, the name escapes me, the defensive guy. But, I love his passion, we're all good. It's no big deal. I don't understand what this is.
Yeah, you almost have to wonder, was this something personal? Was this something off the field? I don't know. I'm completely 100% speculating.
Right.
But this is usually held up, never a big deal by the players. And most time you'll hear if a coach is being honest, they like seeing this. They like to see the fire. They like to see the passion. So you wonder what the behind the scenes is. And you wonder how long the suspension is going to be. I don't imagine this lasts too much longer, I wouldn't think. Martellus Bennett, to his credit, completely unapologetic about it. He basically said, this is what I do, this is how I play, and it's going to continue to happen. So just something that struck me as odd. I've never seen this before.
No, I haven't either. It's like I said, I don't know what else to say, but other than it's just strange.
Right. So moving on, Rick, Monte Ball out with an appendectomy. Had an appendectomy on Monday. Expected to be back in time for the beginning of the season. However, going to miss the rest of training camp. Does that move the needle for you? Does it move Monte Ball up and down? Do you have fears of him missing all the preseason?
Yeah, they said he's going to be ready by week one. What does that mean?
Ready for what?
what does that mean? Is he just going to be ready to practice by week one? Is he going to be in game shape and ready to play, you know, the first game of the year in week one? I'd like to really clarify that. Look, I'm high on Monty Ball, and I really like the Denver offense. But, yeah, it does give me a little bit of a pause. I don't think it's anything real serious to worry about. But, you know, because you know Denver's not going to be relying on Ronnie Hillman very long.
Right.
So as soon as he's ready, and I have to assume with today's technologies, look, I, you know, had my gallbladder out, what, 3 or 4 years ago and went to a banquet that night.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, I don't think it's that serious anymore. So not a whole lot of pause. You maybe wonder a little bit. But not really.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see when he starts football drills again. And maybe you have, even if he's ready for week one, maybe you have some caution there. But as for as short a term as an effect it's going to be, I don't see it having a big effect on his ADP and his draft stock
going into your
fantasy draft. Rick, Josh Gordon, that ruling expected any day now. The Browns actually planning for 8 games, what we thought for all of time now, what was going to be a full season suspension. The Browns seem to have in their mind it's only going to be an 8-game suspension. This is one that surprises me.
Yeah, we've been talking about this, and we are surprised about it. It'd be interesting to see the justifications of what of these suspensions that comes down with. Say Josh Gordon is 8. When they have a clear policy of the second offense, it's a year suspension. How would that get translated down to a half a year suspension when you have another charge
right
on top of that?
Yeah, you get a DUI while you're
right
appealing what's supposed to be a minimum 1 year suspension. How did we land on 8 games? I don't understand.
I would like to hear the justifications of this stuff. And, you know, the Ray Rice 2-game suspension thing, we can go on and on. It's just nothing but inconsistency from the top all the way to the bottom, no matter what decisions made, it seems like. We hit on it before. I don't know if it was last week on this show. Ben Roethlisberger initially suspended 6 games.
Right.
It was reduced to 4, but 6 games on an allegation.
On an allegation. And I watched Ray Rice drag
right
that poor unconscious woman out of an elevator. And what frustrated me with that was due to this inconsistency. How did Roger Goodell explain this inconsistency? He said, I had to give him 2 games to be consistent. So you talk about just...
What does that mean?
Yeah.
Consistent with what?
Exactly. That's the question I have. All right, Rick. Well, we're out of time in this first segment. We could go on with that for hours. We'll leave it at that, and we'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back to the Asylum Fantasy Sports Show on the Fantasy Sports Network. Rick, fun fact for you. There's only 2 weeks a year where there's only one NFL game going on at one time. One's obviously Super Bowl Sunday. When's the other one?
I'm going to have to venture and say the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio.
No question about it, Rick. And as maybe you guys have heard there at the Fantasy Sports Network, we were there and very excited about it. Now, you don't generally want to spend a lot of time breaking down a preseason game, especially the first preseason game. But, Rick, that's just what we're going to do because it's the only game that has happened in the NFL up to the point where we are recording this show. And I think there were some things that came out of it that may become fantasy relevant, something you need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think there were a few things to watch. I mean, just – I'm not going to take a whole lot of credence in anything, but I did see just a few things on both sides of the balls that we want to touch on.
Yeah, and that's just it. And I think the first thing, the Giants running game is something that stuck out to me. Rick, the first thing that stuck out to me, if you guys didn't watch this game or didn't watch past the first series, the Giants offense, the number one offense, was on the field the entire first quarter. 3 full series they played until they finally scored. Tom Coughlin not happy with what he's seen and wasn't willing to pull his starters off the field.
No, and a testament to Buffalo's defense. They were shutting the run down. Rashard Jennings did not do a whole lot, especially in the first part of the game. And Eli Manning got sacked and fumbled, and they lost that fumble. And, there were some good things happening on the defensive side of the Buffalo ball. through the Buffalo side of the defense. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
So, but here's my takeaway. You talk about Rashard Jennings. He had a tough game, and it's true he did. He did rush in the ball. However, Rick, a big part of the passing game, and we got a chance to actually talk to Rashard Jennings after the game about his role in the offense and his role in terms of receiver, and why don't we check that out right now?
Do you enjoy catching passes out of the backfield?
Yeah, that's something I've always kind of prided myself in. You know, I really always wanted to be a complete back, and no one has won in the NFL ever since entering. So catching out the backfield is something huge. It's a big part of that makes defenses have to play honest. And also, you can be quarterback friendly and always there. If the quarterback gets in trouble, you know, you're always going, your routes are 9 times out of 10 going to be closest to the QB. So that's a good way to get extra hidden yards and also keep defenses on their toes.
What did you observe about Andre Williams when he got in the game?
He did exactly what we thought. You know, he's a physical guy, downhill runner. You know, he's a young guy, excited to play, wants to learn, wants to be great. You know, when he came in and tagged me in, you know, I could see the white in his eyes. He was nervous. And then, you know, I told him after the first contact, he realized it's just football. So, you know, I was happy to see him get in, get a touchdown, get some confidence. He's going to do great things in the backfield.
David Wilson's situation aside, I mean, how encouraging is it to know that you've got an Andre Williams there and, you know, to see the 1-2 punch that you guys provided?
You know? Yeah, it's really exciting. You know, David Wilson's just going to be another add to the horse in the stable we have in the backfield. You know, we should do great things in this backfield. We have high expectations. Every single one of us, like I said before, has a capability of carrying a load. I truly believe that. And so, you know, when Dave comes back, we're just going to add more fire.
Early, and it was just a couple of series, but did you like what you saw out of the new offense, or the pace you guys had, and the things you were able to do?
Yeah, again, you know, it comes back to I like this offense because we have tools. We have tools to fix any problem the defense throws at us. And, you know, Eli has a great control of the offense and be able to put us in good positions, good plays, that we can find those hidden soft yardages and pop the big ones in the pass game, also in the run game.
You seem to be a big part of the passing game. Do you expect that to continue throughout the year?
Repeat that?
You seem to be part of the passing game a lot today. Do you expect that to continue?
You know, I think that as a running back, you always should be quarterback friendly. Like I was saying before, you know, finding spots, knowing where the QB's eyes is going to be, knowing where, knowing his progression, knowing when he's going to look for you. The good thing about playing running back is when you're running your route, you get to take a glance at the defense right before you're actually in the line of scrimmage. So you're kind of seeing what the quarterback's seeing, so you know when to turn your head around a little bit quicker than not. But how I'm being utilized, I'm here to be a complete back. If they call me to catch the ball, I'm going to catch the ball. If they call me to run the ball, I'm going to run the ball. If they call me to protect the quarterback, I'm going to protect the quarterback. So I'm going to continue to mold my craft and show that I'm available.
So Rashard Jennings, Rick, a lot of talk about. I asked the question. He had mentioned it a little bit at the beginning of that clip. 3 catches, 20 yards was a big part, looked to be a big part of the offense. This is a guy now with the David Wilson situation. Obviously, we recorded this on Sunday of the Hall of Fame game, not aware until the next day that David Wilson would be shut down. So it's down to Jennings and Williams that he talked about. We have some audio from Williams that we'll get into. But a big part in a PPR format, Jennings moving up my rankings a little bit with what he did. I don't want to move him up based on this game, but with his role and what he says his role is going to be in that offense.
Well, I think maybe I'm going to move him up a little bit because I'm starting to see Rashard Jennings and Andre Williams almost in the same light as your Ahmad Bradshaw and Brandon Jacobs.
Seems very similar.
And I think Williams is more fleet of foot and quicker than Jacobs ever was.
Right.
But, you know, I see Jennings a lot like Ahmad Bradshaw, the same type of role. You know, he catches the passes out of the backfield and a pretty good hard runner in his own right.
Right.
He didn't have much success. I mean, like we said earlier on, the Buffalo defense seemed to really key on that run game and was not allowing Eli, you know, to get that run game going to start passing. And then when he did go back to pass, it was like they pinned their ears back and was going after
him. Right, got after him. Did get the sack fumble on the second series, and that led to the surprise of the Giants coming out in the third series. So, Rick, before we go to break, let's hear from Andre Williams and what he thought of this game. And I got to tell you, Rick, before we hit it here, Andre Williams surprised me, a guy who, you hate to make too much out of one preseason game. The kid ran hard. He looked tested, and he looked ready to roll.
Yeah, he did. He did run hard, and the only thing, just to bear in mind, that Buffalo's first string was actually out when
right.
he went in, but it still didn't take away from what he, as hard as he was running, and he was making some nice moves and had good vision.
Right, and let's hear what he had to say about his performance.
Saw it zone, and the DN was playing the head-up technique on a tight end, so you know I knew that if the fullback captured the safety that was playing down in the box, we could get on the edge, and you know, that's exactly how it played out. The offensive line did a good job blocking it up properly, and we had success.
Rashad said he saw the, you know, your eyes were wide open when you first came out. So the whites of your eyes almost.
Yeah, it was my first time stepping on the field. You know, it was really exciting for me. But I was just you know, focused and confident, and you know, played out really well.
How much confidence does a performance like this, initial whatever first preseason game, give you in moving on?
Well, it gives me confidence. You know, I feel like you know, I'm supposed to be part of the team now. At the same time, we do have a lot of work to do. It wasn't perfect, and I know that Coach Coughlin described it as, you know, it's just a full speed practice. So you know, there's still the season ahead. I got a lot of work to do to, you know, clean things up. And,
were you in for
championship team?
Were you in for any pass protection plays?
A couple. It was maybe, I think I was in for about 2
minutes. Yeah, how'd you do on those? I mean, it's going to be one thing that looks like.
Yeah, I did good, but none of the linebackers blitz, so I'm not just, you know, losing my shot.
You've told us a lot of stories about when you were in college last year, especially, and you got into the backfield waiting for the ball to be snapped, and you looked and you saw 8-9 guys sitting in the box. Any different tonight?
It's different looking at, you know, 6 and 7 man boxes. But, you know, I'm playing at a, you know, with higher level competition. You know, the defense is faster, the safeties are heavier, so it's still an adjustment. But you know, today was a great day for me and for, you know, my team. And, you know, we just got to move forward.
Sometimes guys, rookies make these kind of impacts in the second half. You did it with the starting unit. Does that add a little more credibility to it?
I'm not sure.
I think so.
Is it a thing? I mean, you had the ball in your hand so much last year.
What was that?
You have the ball so much in your hand. Do you just feel comfortable with the ball? I mean, this is a different level. But is there a comfort level when you tuck it under and run?
Yeah, you know, I feel like God built me to run the ball, to play football and carry the ball. So, you know, once I tuck it away, I do feel comfortable. I feel like I'm, you know, doing what I've been built to do. So it's just fun being up. I'm just having fun playing the game.
All right, Rick, Andre Williams, a guy who opened my eyes. You wondered what the David Wilson situation would bring. And Andre Williams comes out, had a lot of success, a nice pedigree coming out of college. So, Rick, we got to take a break. Let's move on. When we come back, we're going to have some comments from Eli Manning. We'll also take a look at the Bills side with E.J. Manuel and Sammy Watkins, and I think we need to analyze that a little bit. And we'll do all that right after this.
We don't sleep so you can stay ahead of your competition. Stick with the Asylum.
Welcome back to the Asylum Fantasy Sports Show, MPS Cable in Manitoba, Canada.
Yes, indeed. And don't forget, Greater New York City area on cable channel, Optimum Package, Cablevision, 147.
All right, Rick, we're taking a look at the Hall of Fame game. I have all the post-game audio. Somebody who didn't make a major contribution, Rick, but somebody I'll be watching very intently in the preseason is Eli Manning.
Well, after leading the league in interceptions last year, I tell you what, he took more than one team with him to the cellar in fantasy. And I don't think he cares so much about that, but I don't think he wants to lead the NFL in interceptions again.
No.
And, you know, no, he's not a QB1, but he's always one of those guys that you felt pretty comfortable having him sit on your bench
right.
in case something happened, yeah. a bye week if you had Brady or whatever.
Very
you
know, competent receiver.
Exactly.
Or quarterback, whatever position he played.
Exactly. And, I mean, he's a two-time Super Bowl champion, so you just didn't really feel too bad. But last year, you know, of course, fantasy owners have short memories.
Right.
And a lot of them are just avoiding him. But I'm watching him, and I just think – from what I've seen, it's a lot different offensive scheme with New York.
Right.
You know, it looks like a lot of the short stuff to Jennings, you know,
right.
a la Maude Bradshaw. They didn't have that last year.
True.
At all. And he was really trying to get it down the field. That doesn't work.
Right. And Eli elaborated on that a little bit post game on Sunday night. Let's hear what he had to say.
I feel like more comfortable as you went along. I mean, did you? After, you know, first and second trip, did it sort of come maybe a little bit easier?
I mean, I thought I had a good feel for what was going on, and you know, and I think, you know, for the quarterback, I think, you know, you just got to get comfortable back in the pocket, knowing that, hey, it's a real rush, and you got a real movement, and these guys are going to hit you. And so, you know, a lot of practice between OTAs and mini camps and training camp where you don't get hit and don't get, you know, it's not as live as it may be for the other guys. So just get used to, you know, working, you know, moving in the pocket, finding lanes, finding time, you know, and trying to make smart decisions.
What did the running game show you on that third drive specifically? You know?
Yeah, I thought we ran the ball really well on that drive. Had a couple big runs. And we got outside the box, and you know, Andre had some nice runs, so it was good. It was good to get the running game going and get that offense line firing off, and that always helps out the whole offense. Well, yeah, I mean, I probably had a bad pocket movement. I should have, you know, more stepped up into the pocket rather than spin out, and those are things you just got to get. You know, get back comfortable doing, and just also protect the ball. I thought I had a pretty good grip on it, but the guy I got to make sure I have two hands on it and make sure I can't fumble in that situation and give them a good field position.
You did that later, the next series, stepped up the pocket and hit Jernigan.
Right, yeah, stepped up. So, yeah, probably what I should have done the first time, and I don't know if I would have been able to make something happen, but it would have been a better decision than what I did. So yeah, that's something that, you know, you've got to try to, you know, these preseason games, that's where it's important, I think, for the quarterback, just getting pocket awareness, because it's hard to simulate it in practice, because it's just a different feeling.
Yeah, like how much of a benefit is it having a guy like Rashad?
Yeah, I think that'll help out our offense, and you know, hit him on a couple passes today, hit him on a screen, and he catches the ball very naturally at the backfield, so that'll be a big part. Or a part of our offense where you can get him in good matchups and have him win some one-on-one battles.
Eli, just the whole weekend experience out here yesterday, watching Michael go in, and you guys had a moment with him or two moments with him before the game.
Yeah, it's been a fun weekend, and it really hit me this past week how special it is to have a teammate go into the Football Hall of Fame. And, you know, that's not something that happens very often. And so very, very excited for Michael. And he was a great teammate and a great friend of mine when we had those, you know, 4 years playing together. And so he's still a good friend and happy to kind of go through this with him a little bit and to see him out today and have him break down the team one last time and give us, you know, do his traditional move with the stomp, and so that was fun, and I know a lot of guys haven't gotten the opportunity to witness that. You know, only me and Diassi and Matthias are the only guys on this team that have ever seen that in person.
All right, Rick, that was Eli Manning post game at the Hall of Fame game. When we get back, we'll take a look at the Bills side, and I think we have some discussion to have there, and we'll do that right after this.
Welcome back to the Sam Sports Show. Talk about Buffalo a little bit, Rick.
All right.
Specifically with me, EJ Manuel. Big, tall, impressive-looking kid. And I just have a lot of concerns with him, quite frankly.
Yeah, an inability to get the ball over the line of scrimmage. You got a weapon like Sammy Watkins, can't get the ball to him.
Yeah, and there was two series I can't remember if it was in the same drive or if it was at the end of one and the beginning of the next. But right within probably five or six plays, two batted balls and almost a clear pick.
Right.
And that's very concerning. Number one, it shows to me he's not comfortable back there. He doesn't have a lot of vision yet that he's really taking in the landscape out there. And he's not using any pump fakes or anything. He's not fooling anybody.
No, when it's the one batted ball, I believe, and Sammy Watkins will say, we'll play his audio later, it was the DN that knocked it down. You got to be able to look off a DN. And something else that concerns me about E.J. Manuel, Rick, I won't scoop it, but something he says at the end of this clip. Let's go to the clip now, and something he says at the end that really bothered me.
All right.
You know, I did a pretty good job with what I, you know, when I was in. So I thought the first unit we did, we had to do. I think if it was a point where Coach wanted us to continue to play and show what we needed to show, he would have done that. But I think he knows that, you know, being that it's our first game and we have another one coming up soon, I'm sure we'll get some more run, you know, coming up the next week.
When you looked at the stills on the sidelines, did you think that you had Sammy a couple of times? I think two of them that you were intended for him were batted down.
Right. I know the gold ball, you know, just put out there for him to get, you know, just run under it. I think another third down I can remember vividly was a batted ball, and you know, that's just, you know, they get paid to on defense as well. So you know, just go back to the drawing board and continue to work off.
EJ didn't get the work with
They get paid to on defense as well. Perhaps, but you botched it, EJ. They got paid to. So does a cornerback. So it's excusable that every pass you throw gets intercepted? Is that excusable because the cornerback gets... I don't like writing this off. I know it's one game. It's the Hall of Fame game. It's the least important, even of unimportant preseason games. But I don't like that attitude. I'm not comfortable with it, Rick.
You know, I'll take it with a grain of salt. I know people put off things differently. You know, I think maybe it's an indication that his confidence isn't shaken.
Maybe. Okay,
and,
that's good.
And, you know,
I can live with that.
He's moving on. He's playing against pros as well. He didn't do his job well. Things like that will happen. He's going to move on, continue to work hard. That's how I'm taking from him. I really... From that aspect of it, I'm still fairly impressed with the young man.
That's a fair point. And somebody else I was impressed with was Sammy Watkins, and seeing him in pregame, seeing him in workouts, looked really impressive. Unfortunately, E.J. Manuel just not willing to get the ball, unable to get the ball to him. I don't say not willing to get
right.
the ball to him, unable to. And Sammy Watkins talked a little bit about that.
Going against a great corner, you kind of widen. I got to get a better release.
You talked about that going against, you know, I see you on Rogers Cromartie on one side, and you know, those are pretty good players. Did you feel like, you know, hey, I can do this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I go against great guys in practice every day. Stephon Gilmore, Corey Graham, Leotis. So I feel like I can compete at the highest level. So, I mean, you see different things in how they play you, but at the same time, you just got to do your technique.
Did anything kind of surprise you from your first game, at least playing against another NFL defense that's not your own team?
They didn't show too much. First of all, they was mainly one high pressing every time, so really couldn't get the flow of the game. But you can tell that's a way more physical game. Those guys are there trying to get their hands on you, so you got to be physical, and you got to really go through your steps, and that's being physical and getting off the ball.
Do you have any butterflies at all? I mean, it's preseason, but it is NFL, real NFL football.
Not at all. Once I'm on the field and have two or three plays, I'm fine. I wish I could have got a ball and got tackled. Then it would have been out the window. But can't wait till I catch a ball and get hit.
It looked like you had your guy beat on a slant when the ball got batted down. I think that would have been your catch.
Yeah, I think the DN did a great job just sitting there reading his eyes. And from what EJ seen and I seen, well, felt I could have probably had that slant. It would probably got 8 to 10 yards, but things happen.
You got the itch now? Do you have the itch to get back out there? One game
down? Of course, I can't wait to get back out there Friday. And, hopefully we play a little longer. It's up to the coaches, but we need to get back on the same page and have great practice and come out and be prepared Friday.
Thanks, Sammy.
All right, Rick, so everything we've talked about then in a minute or less, what's your redraft? Obviously, he's a dynasty star. In a redraft league, what's your fantasy outlook on Sammy Watkins?
I'm not sure I can have Sammy over WR3. Specifically, like you said before, it's all quarterback. They've got the running game. They've got the line. But, you know, E.J. Manuel is going to have to improve a lot more for me to move Sammy Watkins up.
And that's just it. He's got all the skills. Look, he's a rookie wide receiver, so I think there's going to be some growing pains. We didn't really have the opportunity to see that. You factor in quarterback concerns. I think, look, he's draftable, but I'm ninth round maybe, Rick, and he's going to end up going before that because of his name, because he's Sammy Watkins. In a redraft league, he's going to go in the sixth or seventh round, and it's just entirely too high. There's safer options out there than Sammy Watkins.
Yeah, they keep an eye on him in preseason, though. Maybe something will start clicking a little bit, and he'll start – you know, let's not forget the fact he is a rookie, E.J. Manuel, second-year man.
Right.
You know, it takes a little time to start building up some chemistry. So right now, I'm not writing them off as a tandem I'm going to be targeting sometime in fantasy. Right now, not yet.
Yeah, not quite yet. And don't overpay for Sammy Watkins. If you can get him in that eighth or ninth round, that's the right place for him. All right, Rick, well, it's time for another break. When we get back, we're going to talk to NFL agent Rilio Mastrantonio from an agent's perspective. We're going to take a look at the JerMichael Finley situation and talk a little bit about disability insurance that the players cover. And we'll do that right after this.
And now, back to Fligger and Briggs on the Fantasy Sports Network.
Welcome back to the Asylum Fantasy Sports Channel on Channel 147.
Yes, indeed, we're Fligger and Briggs. Welcome back, and it's time for From an Agent's Perspective with NFL agent Rilio Mastrantonio. Rilio, welcome.
Hello, everyone. Hello, gentlemen.
How's it going this week, Rilio?
It's been an interesting week. It's bittersweet.
Yeah. Keeping you hopping this week.
Oh, I tell you, the real games begin this weekend. So the next 3 weeks, I'm going to be a basket case. But other than that, we're in great shape.
Do you ever get to relax? And then once the season starts, do you relax, or does it just go on all year round?
No, it goes on all year round.
Hey, so somebody else whose agent may be going through something similar is JerMichael Finley, really. Just something we wanted to get your take on. Obviously has the $10 million insurance policy for permanent injury. Has been cleared to play. There's some discussion on whether or not he comes back and plays, or he collects that $10 million policy, or if he can even do that. So I'm just sort of curious, maybe let's start with these policies. Is this common? Do most players have these? Do all players have these? How does that start? What's the background of those insurance policies?
They're called basically disability policies. So in other words, if you end up not being able to play and do your profession within the reasonable amount of dollars for that profession. So we'll talk about that a little later. But we are dealing with insurance companies here. Not that I'm negative on insurance companies, but they tend to really not want to pay when they don't have to. I mean, who does really? But especially them. So they're good policies to have. I encourage players to have them. I just read an article where they say now about 40% of the NFL players have these type of policies, which is a pretty good number. I think it should be higher, but that's what has it right now, roughly. They say most NHL players have it, believe it or not, and that only covers them when they're on the ice. When they're off the ice, they have separate policies for that, believe it or not. And most baseball players don't take it until the end of their contracts, when they might lose money in free agency. So that's kind of the landscape of the disability policy. They're quite pricey. They generally come out to be about $10,000 for every $1 million covered.
Wow.
Now that's not a lot for someone who's making $14 million a year. I mean, $10,000 is nothing if you're going to insure. You know, $100,000 insures $10 million in salary. The way you feel it the most is the rookies. You know, they're the ones that don't have the big bank.
Right. I mean, a guy like David Wilson, you know, 23 years old, it really hasn't had much of a career. I would assume that would be rather pricey for him.
He made some pretty good money. Yeah, I don't know if he had it or not. I hope, I'm praying that he had it for his sake. Because that's the perfect – see, now, if you're looking at a situation where that insurance really comes to play is the David Wilson scenario, because he's basically cannot play football anymore, period.
Exactly.
Doctor said you're not cleared. If you play, you could be paralyzed. That's the type of situation. Finley is a little bit different, and I'm not going to comment directly on that because I'm not his agent, and I don't want to be his agent, and that's, you know, the way it is. But his is a little different because he has been cleared to play medically, and he's had some offers, allegedly, that I've been reading in the trades. So he's in a different scenario because he's not a David Wilson where if you
right.
play, you can be paralyzed and you should retire and no doctor is going to clear you.
Now, okay, just you're a neutral lawyer, mm-hmm. and you just happen to be looking at this. Now, does he really have much ground to stand on if he's looking to cash in a what we have already described, a disability policy, if he is cleared to work?
Funny you should mention that, because I have a law degree, and luckily, and from a neutral standpoint, completely, and this is going to be a cop-out answer, but the policy has to be read to see what the fine print is as far as that goes. But generally speaking, you can still collect on a disability policy if there are jobs to work, because there's all kinds of categories underneath that. Can you make as much as you made? No. I mean, let's face it. He's not going to get the money that he's going to get in this banged-up situation. Let's face it. I mean, he's only going to get, you know, what, the $730,000 maybe they'll pay him, as opposed to his real net value, which is, you know, he should be paid millions and millions of dollars based on his years of experience and talent. So that's something you have to factor in. Now, the question that everyone has to answer is, when is it a fine line between waiting to see if you can get more than $10 million or sitting back and falling back on the policy? And I can tell you this either way, from a neutral standpoint, not just him, but in general, they are going to fight this thing. If this was not Jermichael Finley, if it was really Iowa Master Antonio, they would fight this thing. They're going to fight it tooth and nail, because he is not your typical disability case. I mean, he's been cleared to play. He's got offers. That's all going to factor in when they go into litigation. Don't let them kid you. I mean, that's all going to be a big deal. So that one's going to be a fight, in my opinion, to the end.
So let's just say outsiders' perspective, and let's say he is able to. The litigation determines he is able to collect on this policy. The story I read is theorizing that he's probably getting offers at $1 million a year. I tend to lean towards you in the more $700,000 range, but let's even say $1 million. If you were representing Rick Fleeger, NFL football player, coming off of what was believed to be 6 months ago, a career-ending neck injury and that he'd never play again, I'm stunned he's been cleared to play after what they said happened last year. Say I could collect on that policy. Would you recommend I do that with risk of future injury, or do I sign the deal, keep the policy in place? What would you recommend?
Well, let's play a little real scenario here. I'd sit you down and I'd say, Rick, how badly do you want to play the game? That's what I would say to you. I would say to you, does secure monetary comfort for the rest of your life outweigh your burning desire to play the game? I have to hear that from you. And once I hear that from you, then I'll react either way. If you tell me, hey, Rudio, no, I don't want to risk my future walking ability, and I'm comfortable doing that, and I have a business I want to start, or I want to be with my family, I would say, Rick, don't go back. But if you came to me and you said, hey, Rudio, man, I don't care. I love the game so much that I'm willing to risk the $10 million and my health, but I want to play, then I would have to support you on that. I mean, it sounds like a cop-out answer, but that's really what, you know, I would suspect his agent is telling him. I can't speak for him or his agent, obviously, but I would suspect that's how I would handle it if it was me and you, Rick. I would say, Rick, you know, what do you do? And then I would sit and say, these are the risks.
Right.
Can never walk again. And if you're willing to overcome those, you know, as your agent, I'm going to support you either way. So I'm going to present you with the best set of facts for both scenarios. Personally, myself, I would tell Rick, Fleeger to just take the policy if he can get it and run.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a wise decision. So, hey, we got a couple minutes left. We'll move off of that. That was an interesting story. Don't know how much you can really talk about the guys you have in camp and what's going on. Just curious what your day-to-day life is like and how your guys are doing right now.
Well, thanks for asking. Shelby Harris is doing very well. He just made second team on the official roster of the Raiders, which is exciting for a rookie, behind Justin Tuck at the defensive end position. So day-to-day life, I'm actually heading up to Minneapolis the next couple days to see him and watch him play. Waiting after every practice, check the internet, see what the press is, check in with some of the Oakland personnel. So that's kind of what you do on a daily basis. Connor O'Neill, the linebacker, was just released from the Bears yesterday because of an injury to another player. So he got jettisoned, but he has a chance to come back and was highly, everybody told him, hey, look, you never know, it's over. So we're living with that. So now my next feat will be to find possible teams that he can go to over the next few days. Our organization has seven other people in camp right now, some starters, some veterans, players on the Rams, players on the Colts. So we'll be watching them. So we'll be watching a lot of football and hoping for the best and just kind of staying in touch with all the teams and chewing all my fingernails down to a nub.
Well, that's good to know that you're going to be nervous for about, 6 months?
No, I'll be nervous forever. You're nervous in the off season too.
Well, that's a good
just
point.
Just nervous.
Well, that's good. We certainly wish all the players well. We're going to be checking in weekly. And I'll tell you what, hopefully – some good things will happen when the season starts.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I'd like to do on a future show, too. I have a bunch of research I did on there's actual NCAA policies that players can take out that's kind of sanctioned by the NCAA. So maybe we can cover that on a future show.
Yeah, that would be interesting because the whole background fascinates me. And when you talk about insuring a business, when your body, your physical ability is your business, it becomes touching. It's really fascinating. Well, really, I don't know where the time goes so quick. Good luck this week. Have fun up in Minnesota, and we'll be following all your guys. Why don't you take a second and tell everybody where they can find you?
Sure, www.mvp, M as in Mike, vpsportsmanagement.com. Check it out, and if I can be of help, let me know. And you boys have a great week, too, and we'll see how your Steelers do.
Oh, they're going to take it by storm.
I don't know about that. All right, thanks. This was an Agent's Perspective with Relio Mastrantonio. Rick, we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to the final segment of the Asylum Sports Show. Rick, you brought it up in the first segment. There's only two games during the year,
right?
There's only one game, two times, but there's only one game going on,
right?
Okay, now we'll switch it to the Super Bowl.
Okay, Hall of Fame game's over. We covered that right down to the wire.
And what's the worst part of the Super Bowl for you?
Halftime show.
Exactly, mine too. In fact, I don't even watch them. Quite honestly,
I go outside and have a cigar.
There's a petition going out now.
Oh, a petition. Okay.
They are tired of Bruno Mars and Black Eyed Peas and Madonna and so forth.
I'm with them.
For the halftime shows. So they're getting a petition, and it is change.org petition.
Oh, okay. A political movement of note.
They're wanting to bring in a new act for the halftime.
Oh, okay.
You know who the new act is?
Up With People. Are they still around?
Nah, I'd never heard of them. But I have heard of Weird Al Yankovic.
Is he still alive?
Yeah, he's still alive.
I'd watch that halftime show.
They are trying to get him to do Super Bowl 49 halftime show. And would not only, according to them, it would not only be overly accepted by the millions of views, but it would remain true to the standards and quality of the show business we have come to love and respect out of this prestigious event.
Oh, and when I think now, showmanship, I think of Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah.
Prestige, I think Weird Al.
Well,
Yeah, that's what I think of.
Love and respect of prestigious event. Yeah, I mean, quality, Weird Al.
Right.
Standards of the Super Bowl,
Weird Al. Right. I mean, it's a perfect fit. I don't know how Roger Goodell hasn't thought of this yet.
Yeah, it is. The theatrics alone, according to this, would be hilarious and a welcoming change and draw a wider audience of fans that typically would not tune into the championship game or halftime show. I'm going to draw the line there. I'm tuning into that game. I don't care if it's me up there karaokeing at halftime. I'm going to watch that Super Bowl.
I'd watch that, too. So I will join the movement. I will sign that petition. Give me a Weird Al at the halftime.
You betcha.
All right, Rick. Well, we are completely out of time. Thank you to everyone for listening to the Asylum Fantasy Sports Show for this week. We'll be back next week, same time, same channel, 147 Cablevision, MTS Cable in Manitoba, Canada. Check out our website, asylumfantasysports.com, to get further coverage of the entire Hall of Fame weekend. We'll be back next Sunday. Until then, we'll see you.
Take care.